Welcome to MTG Pro Tutor, your gathering of insights, tips, and advice from renowned players and community icons. Connect with venerated teachers to gain the knowledge you need to improve your skills. Now, here's your planar guide and personal tutor, Sean Penrod.
Hello and welcome. How are you today? If you are new to MTG Pro Tutor, welcome. Here, we interview the best Magic the Gathering players in the world twice a week. Every Tuesday and Friday, you'll have a new interview waiting for you. If you've been with me in the show for a while, thank you so much. Because of you, I'm here, and I really appreciate your dedication and listening to the show. And I look forward to doing many, many more. Before we sit down with our guests, there are a few things that I'd like to cover. I want to give a quick shout-out to Marjorie Alexander. Marjorie is the show's newest patron, so thank you so much for supporting the show directly. That really helps out. It really means a lot. Thank you so much. Also, if you haven't yet, there is still time to jump in on the Ultimate Tournament Bag Giveaway. mtgprotutor.com/giveaway is where you can go for that. Again, that's /giveaway. And what you get is a fully loaded Pirate Lab carrying case. It has the cool blue dividers inside, so you can make it any size you want. It has a Steel Commander deck box, which is the best in the biz. It got an A-plus rating from the professor. There is a monster playmat tube, which is a prism shape, so it doesn't roll away on the table, which is really nice. 10 RK Post tokens, which are just unique and awesome and super sweet because RK Post is one of the best artists in Magic, in my opinion. I even threw in some brain snacks. I did a little bit of research and found out that pumpkin seeds and blueberries and chocolate really help your brain, which is exactly what you need during long tournament days. So if you want a chance to win this sweet, sweet prize, then go to mtgprotutor.com/giveaway. Sign on up. It's free to do so. You get one entry for signing up and then a special link that you can share. And for every one person who signs up through that link, you get two entries. So sign up, share the heck out of it, and good luck. I'm really excited to do fun things like this for you, and I can't wait to see who gets it. Again, you have until this Friday to sign up. The giveaway closes this Friday night. Speaking of Friday, I'll be up in Portland for Grand Prix Portland this weekend, and Friday night from 7 to 10 p.m., we'll be having a Pro Tutor Prodigy meetup. It's going to be at the Altabira City Tavern. You can literally walk there from the convention center. The restaurant is on the top floor of a hotel, so they have an open seating balcony that we're just going to be able to go up and socialize in and kind of take over. We don't have a reservation or assigned seating or anything like that, so feel free to drop in at any time. I would love to see you face-to-face, get to know you better, talk about Magic, hear your journey, your story, and just really take advantage of the fact that many of us will be at the same place at the same time for the same reason. So, would love to see you there. Again, the Pro Tutor Prodigy this Friday will be at the Altabira City Tavern. Join the Facebook group. The details are all there, the address, the time. There is an event set up inside the group that you can say whether you're coming or not. That way we can quickly communicate with everyone who's going to be there. So I look forward to seeing you there. I'm really excited to rub shoulders, shake hands, and talk about Magic with you. Speaking about Magic events, of course, last weekend was the Pro Tour. And I always love seeing past guests go on and do great things. And in this particular case, past guest Lucas Blohan won the Pro Tour. How cool is that? Of course, I have lots of respect for all the other players. I love seeing them do well as well. But it's always especially fun for me to see a past guest do so well. So mtgprotutor.com/Lucas Blohan is where you can go to catch his episode. Or on your podcast player, whether it's an Android or iPhone, you can just scroll back to episode 61. You should find him there. Episode 61 was Lucas Blohan. So pretty sweet stuff. That's really it for the pre-interview stuff. I wanted to give a shout out to Marjorie for being the newest patron. Let you know that the giveaway is closing up this Friday, so make sure you jump in as quickly as possible. Congratulate Lucas Blohan for doing so well. Let you all know about the Pro Tutor Prodigy meetup in Portland this weekend. And with that, we're ready to bring in our guest and talk about Magic. What's up, everybody? I'm super excited to have our guest with us today. Our guest recently graduated college with a degree in sports and recreation management. He's a front-end leader at a grocery store during the weekdays and a ski instructor in the winter. He's an aspiring Magic pro with one Grand Prix top eight and two Star City Games opens, one of which is a win. Coming to us from right outside Scranton, Pennsylvania, prodigies near and far, let's welcome the one, the only, Matt Tumovich. Matt, how you doing today?
Excellent.
Excellent. Are you ready to delve into your mind and share with the audience tips and tricks to take their game to the next level?
I am.
Sweet. Now, all you prodigies out there, if you want to connect with Matt, the best place to do that is on Facebook. He does have Twitter. It's at MattTumovich13, but he's not on there that often. So if you want to say thank you or ask him a question, hit him up on Facebook. He's pretty easy to find and you can talk about Magic there. So Matt, let's dive into what you have going on a little bit outside of Magic. We mentioned that you're a ski instructor, that you just graduated. You have a lot going on. So what are you doing right now other than Magic?
Yeah, I do a lot of stuff besides play Magic. Like I said, I work part-time at a grocery store just to make money to pay for college out. I'm still looking for a job in my field. But like in the winter, I do ski instructing, and that's kind of it's kind of hard to play Magic and do ski instructing at the same time because I have to work on the weekends. So, but ever since like top eight in the Grand Prix recently, I'm definitely going to try to hit up a lot of Grand Prix during the winter. But outside of Magic, I also I play a lot of sports. I play basketball a lot. Big outdoors guy. So yeah. Magic is pretty much the only card game. I play poker occasionally, but pretty much that's the only thing I do that's similar to that. I'm just mostly a big sports guy. I'm always either playing sports video games, watching Sports Center, stuff like that.
Excellent. That's great. So you're outdoors and active and keeping healthy. That's wonderful. And in the pre-interview chat, you mentioned that you have a brother. So older, younger, how, like, do you play sports or Magic with your siblings? How many of you are there? Like, tell us about that.
I have one brother. I play basketball with him a lot and stuff like that. But no one else in my family like plays Magic or anything like that. But I tried to convince my brother to learn, but he didn't really want to, unfortunately.
Hey, no worries, each their own. So we would love to hear your story, your journey, how you got into Magic, how you've grown as a player, and that's where we're going to start. We're going to go back to the very beginning, and we'd love for you to put us right there on your shoulder and really help us, you know, smell the cards with you. Tell us the story of when you first got into, you first saw, you first played with Magic.
Like I mentioned, I play basketball a lot. One of my friends, he's also my neighbor, I played basketball with him a lot. We used to play the Lord of the Rings trading card game a long time ago. Together with made by Decipher. They stopped continuing it because they like couldn't make all these sets, and obviously it was based off the movies. So there was no more movies to make cards off of. So they stopped playing that, but we used to play that. So like in my freshman year of college, so 4 years ago, he's like, Matt, I've been playing this game for a year. Real fun, you should learn how to play. So I'm like, all right, I guess I'll learn how to play. I was not super open to starting playing because like all I do is play sports and stuff. I saw people playing games like that in high school and stuff. It's like whatever. So I learned how to play it though. He taught me. I picked it up relatively quick. I'm super competitive person, so right away I wanted to be good. I didn't want to be some kind of just random, you know. So I started when Return to Ravnica came out, that set. So it was like 4 years ago about, and my first thing I did was a draft of Innistrad, I think. So, and I actually did pretty well. I made like my FNM that we did draft with had like 30 people, and I made the top eight and got a few packs. So I was like, all right, this game's fun.
Nice. And then awesome.
Yeah. So as I said, I always wanted to be super competitive. So I'm like, I asked some of the better players at the store. I'm like, all right, what decks are going to be good when this set comes out? And a lot of them said, since I'm a beginner, like, you know, aggressive decks. So there's a Jund Zombies deck that had featured like Gravecrawler, Drawf's Messenger, Falcon Wrath Aristocrat, stuff like that. So there was like this in event deck thing. So that deck was easy to get because like the zombie event deck had like most of the cards in it already. So I bought a couple of those. I had some little extra money from work, so I bought some Falcon Wrath Aristocrats, and then I had this Jund Zombies deck. So I played that at my first few FNMs and was making top eight, so I'm like, all right, this is fun. But, nice. Yeah. I also, like, obviously when you're new, you like big flashy mythics and planeswalkers. So I really became attached to Sorin, Lord of Innistrad, and Garrick, Primal Hunter, I think.
Right.
So, there's this Star City Super IQ coming up at the local store where I learned how to play, and so I'm like, all right, I want to build this, like, Abzan deck. It was called Junk at the time, but this Abzan deck with, like, Garrick, Sorin, Angel of Serenity, Thragtusk, stuff like that. It was just, like, a collection of, like,
nice.
Good cards.
Nice. Yeah.
But I'm like, that's, like, a lot of decks that people are new. It's just a collection of good cards. But basically, like, the deck that I built was, like, happened to have a really good matchup against the best deck at the time. So when I went to Super IQ, it was a 1K. It was my first non-FNM event. I ended up playing against the same deck a bunch of times because all the best players played it, and I kept beating them. So I ended up making top eight of my first non-FNM event.
Wow!
And I had to play against my friend that taught me how to play in the top eight. He's a very good control player, so he was playing an Esper Sphinx's Revelation deck, and I ended up beating him. So in the top, I made the top four of this event. I lost to one of my friends who also taught me how to play, who ended up making the top eight of Grand Prix Charleston, I think it was, the week after, with this green-white aggro deck. But overall, we split, and I made $200. So that made me like infinitely hooked on the game just there, being a month in, just like having a success like that.
Wow.
So
yeah.
Then basically over the, like, I never really saw early on the value of traveling to like GPs and opens and stuff. Like, I thought it was kind of weird that people would like spend all this money on hotels and like just to maybe potentially top eight, like at this 500 to 2000 person event. Like, that just seems so unlikely. So I just played a lot of like Star City IQs between 2013 and 2014. And then at the end of 2014, I started like going opens. I qualified for the one Star City Invitational just because I like top eight a bunch of IQs. I never won one early on, but I had a lot of top eights. So then I started going to the bigger events. My first GP was Baltimore in the winter of 2015, I think it was. It was a limited one. I was very confident because I finally got a Magic Online and I was playing some sealed dailies and stuff. I kept consistently 4-0-ing them for that event, but I opened a bad sealed pool and did bad. But I was confident, you know, to still keep going to big events. But yeah, it's kind of my start. And then pretty much 2015, I started going to bigger events, and now I'm here.
Nice. So what's the farthest you've traveled for a Grand Prix?
For a GP, I feel like there's one farther in Providence. I haven't been to that many, so I'm trying to. Yeah, I think Providence is probably the farthest, or Pittsburgh. I think Pittsburgh might just be just as far.
Nice. How far? And how far is that?
It's about 5 hours from me. Like, I still haven't flown to an event yet, but which I'm going to start obviously because I want to hit silver. And since this new Pro Tour coming up is would be considered my rookie year, I definitely want to aggressively try to hit if I can. Like, have some big successes, go after the rookie of the year spot.
Absolutely. Now, you mentioned, so Pittsburgh being one of the farthest ones that you've been to, that's the GP that you top eighted at, right?
Yeah, I also went there for a modern one last year, and I actually almost top eighted that one as well. That was like my second modern event ever. I just played Affinity, and the deck just carried me despite misplaying every round. But I was like 11-2 and then lost to a guy that made top eight and then won my last round. But I was like, yeah, two wins away from top eighting that one.
Wow, that's awesome. Now, which Pro Tour are you qualified for?
Pro Tour at Kaladesh, so the next one, in Hawaii. So, yeah, it's pretty awesome.
So that'll be your furthest event after that, or when it comes, but at least they pay for it, so that's good.
Yeah, I'm going to start flying to events. Like, I'm going to fly to GP Atlanta before the Pro Tour to practice limited.
That's excellent. So I love hearing your story and your progression through, you know, the game and coming up in the ranks. And so when you very first came in to Magic, you said you came in on Return to Ravnica. Is that right?
Yep. Yeah.
And then your first event was Innistrad Draft. So if you were part of a Ravnican guild, which guild would you be a part of?
Definitely the red-green one. Gruul, I think. Gruul.
Why? Yeah. What resonates with you about Gruul?
My favorite card ever, Gatecrash had that Gruul in it. So it had like cards like Gorklin Rampager and Domiraid. And Domiraid was my favorite card of all time. So,
oh, perfect segue. That was the next question, is what is one of your favorite cards of all time? All right, so Domiraid. So tell us, for those of us who don't know, what is it, what does it do, and why do you like it?
So Domiraid's a 3-mana planeswalker, costs 1 red and a green. It starts at 3 loyalty. It's +1 is you look at the top card of your deck, and if it's a creature, you reveal it and put it in your hand. The -2 is two creatures fight. The ultimate is -7. As you guys get, I remember this really well. Double strike, trample, hexproof, and haste. So I loved embleming in that thing because you just won and you hit them for like a million. But but that card is my favorite because it kind of resembles the decks that I like playing. It's a card advantage card, it's a removal spell, and it's a threat all in one. And I'm big, my style of deck that I love playing the most is aggressive mid-range decks. So decks that are the aggressor most of the time, but also can play the control role in some matchups. One of my favorite deck of all time was, it was still kind of before I was a good competitive player, but it was a red-green deck that Brian Kibler played at the World Championships. And had a featured Domiraid, Gorklin Rampager, Thundermaw Hellkite, Mana Elves, Flint of War, stuff like that. So it's an aggressive deck, but like it wasn't the aggressor in some matchups, like Mono Red or occasionally against the Aristocrat, depending on their draws. But Yeah, so a lot of decks I play are these aggressive mid-range decks. Like the deck that I won a Starcity Open with was Abzan Aggro. That was an aggressive deck, obviously, in most of the matchups, but it also played the control role. And recently with the Bant Company variants that I top 8 the Open with a couple days ago, and then that I top 8 the GP with. They're the control deck in some matchups and the aggro deck in most.
Excellent. So my experience with Dami Raid is my first standard event pretty much ever. My friend let me borrow his deck, and it had Dami Raid in it, and I went to some like county fair or something. They were having a tournament in there or whatnot, and it was my first standard event with a borrowed deck, and so I didn't really know what I was doing. You know, I was just, you know, playing cards and stuff like that, which was great. And I got blown out, I remember, by Boros Reckoner. Act of Treason, right? And I hate getting blown out by combos that I don't even know exist. And yeah, so like the guy, like, oh, I'm gonna do 13 damage to all creatures, and he had like two Boros Reckoners, so like 26 damage to me.
Was a Blasphemous Act? Was that the card?
Yeah, sorry, that's what I meant. Yeah, Blasphemous Act. Yeah.
Yeah, I remember that, yeah.
Oh my gosh, I was so mad. Because I mean, again, like, because I got blown out by a combo I didn't even know existed, so I didn't, you know, I just didn't see it coming. So he's doing his thing, and I'm doing my thing, and he's like, Blasphemous Act, and you're dead. I'm like, what? Anyways, but that event, I played, like I said, a borrowed standard deck. It had Dami Raid in it, so I'm vaguely familiar with the card because that was my first, like, standard event ever.
Yeah, I wish that card gets a reprint, because, like, I really, really want to play with that now that I'm, like, I kind of know what I'm doing a lot more than I did back then, because card is just like, I love that card, everything about it.
What's his story? Like, so he's from Ravnica. Do you know, like, flavor-wise, what's going on with him?
No, not really.
I didn't know. Like, you said you wanted a reprint. I wonder what it would take to get a reprint of him. That's what I'm...
No, like, maybe a return to Ravnica or something like that.
Maro says we're going back someday, so maybe. So along the same lines as cards, what is one of your favorite sets? Because you've been, you know, playing since Return to Ravnica, and you've obviously done different competitive events throughout different sets. So what's one of your favorite sets?
Yeah, I obviously like Gatecrash a lot because it had all those sweet red-green cards in it. But one of my also favorite ones was Khans of Tarkir. Recently, it hit at Siege Rhino, which is also one of my favorite cards of all time. A lot of people hate that card, but I really like that card because, it's the example of the decks that I want to play, aggressive mid-range cards. And it also had, like, the fetch lands, which are awesome. It allowed me to get in the modern easier. Also, I like Sarkhan in that set. He didn't see a ton of play, but it was a cool card. And Anna Fenza was also in that set.
Yeah.
3-mana 4/4, exiled stuff. Those put counters on your guys, excellent card. I loved those Abzan decks back in a few months ago.
Yeah, no kidding. Me too. I liked Abzan as well. Green White has been on quite the run for the past couple of years with Abzan, and now straight up Green White. So Matt, tell us an early challenge that you struggled with that you eventually overcame. What was an aspect of Magic that took a while for you to grasp? Yeah,
I feel like starting in 2015 to now, like, I really wanted to make the Pro Tour because I'm just an ultra competitive person. I've always, just from my sports background, I'm an extremely competitive person, and I was coming up short. Like, when I first started getting better, I won a PPTQ and stuff like that, and I fell short at the RPTQ. But like, one of the toughest things ever, I think, was the first standard GP I ever went to was in Providence. That was last summer, about a little like a year and maybe a month ago. I played a red-green deck with, like, a lot of cards that are like this, like, Goblin Rabble Master Stormbreath deck. And I started off 10-0 at that event, and it was my first standard GP ever. And I beat, like, Brian Brundu in round 10, and I had my first camera match around 11. But, like, from around 11 to 13, I lost all three of those rounds from, like, Mul-5s and stuff, and it was, like, real brutal. So I was just, like, real down. Like, I won the last one and then conceded to a friend who could have made top 8 because I got paired up. But like, that was just really tough because I just felt like I just keep coming up short, and I had to like keep my head like level to not, like, you know, be like, I'm never gonna make it there. Like, I can definitely make it there. But I was so down though, because like, I tasted the, like, I actually sold my playmat after round 10. This is probably bad like karma or whatever, but I sold the playmat, the GP playmat round 10, because I thought I was going to get the top 8 one.
Oh, but, wow.
Yeah, because I'm like, I'm 10-0. There's no, I'm playing the best deck in the room. There's no way I'm not top 8-ing. But
I got this. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, but that was really tough, and like at just at times, like even recently, like this summer, there was a PPTQ season for Honolulu actually, and I just kept losing in the top four of all these PPTQs, and like I was just getting really down on myself. I was texting some of my friends. I'm like, oh, GP Pittsburgh might be my last event for like a month. Take a break off because this game wasn't making me happy. Just like keep losing in top four of these events and like stuff like that, and like because I just really wanted to win. I just really wanted to get to the Pro Tour, and so that was. Basically, there's been times like that all throughout kind of when I'm playing that I just didn't think I was good enough, but I just kept playing and eventually just finally got there recently. So
yeah. So would you say that your first, you know, standard Grand Prix where you went 10-0 and then bombed and didn't make it, would you say that is your worst Magic moment? Or
that was a mix between my best Magic moment and my worst Magic moment. It's because like it gave me the confidence because I beat a lot of high profile name players in that tournament, and I'm like, it gave me the confidence that I'm good enough to get there. But it also destroyed my confidence by saying I'm just coming up short again. Like it's just a story of me playing Magic. I just keep coming up short and like losing in the top four events and stuff like that. Yeah, so it was probably the worst and the best at the same time, but it definitely helped out in a way too.
What an interesting mix for sure. So what would you want people to take away from your experience? What did you learn from that, from your worst/best moment mixed together?
The main thing I got out of it that maybe other people can is if you make a run like that, like you're good enough. Like if you win 11 or 12 matches at a GP, like I think you're good enough. You just like, you had a few unlucky rounds, most likely with the drawing. You obviously had a lot of luck to get that far too, like top decking the right card or whatever. But, just really don't give up if you feel like you're going to fall, you're falling short of your goals. Like as a competitive player, obviously I was never really an EDH player. Like every tournament I went to was always to try to do well, even though I didn't always do well.
And you mentioned that you were sending texts off to friends and stuff like that. So do you have like a support group or, you know, like a core group of other players that help each other through these situations or that you go to events with, or what's the community like, I guess, or what have you done for yourself as far as that goes?
Yeah, I try, like ever since I started playing, I tried to talk, like a big thing I always tried doing was asking the players that were better than me what I could have done differently on each turn, how I could have won this game if I sequence cards different. So I always tried to pretty much talk to who I knew were the better players in the area. My main core group of guys is my neighbor who taught me how to play. He doesn't play a ton at the big events, but he's a pretty good player, and he plays at he's won a PPTQ, stuff like that. There's also mostly people that I met at events. There's the guys that taught me how to play, because we used to, like, the local store in my town went away where I learned how to play, so it's no longer open. So I don't actually have a local store, which kind of stinks, but like all those guys, I still talk to them. And then there's just people that I meet at events that came down that I play with. I have there's a lot of different people I go to events with. There's some people I met in that live 45 minutes from me. They were a little more accomplished than the guys that started with me. They had a few open top eights and a GP top eight and a few Pro Tour appearances. So I started talking to them a bit, and I definitely got better playing with them. And then another friend I met who's he actually works at West Point for the Army. He played on a few Pro Tours, and he's definitely helped me get better as well. Yeah, I usually go to group events with like four or five people, and we all after that GP in Providence, like they're sending me messages. They're like, "You're gonna get there one day." I mean, we saw you play well on camera. You just got destroyed by mana screw and stuff like that, or like mulligans. And so they'll like text me through like that I'm gonna get there, even though my hard times pretty much.
That's good. That's neat that you've surrounded yourself with players who understand and who support each other and, you know, give each other that boost that's needed. Because when you are down, when you just had a loss or whatever, it's good to have those people who can, you know, support you and say, hey, like, you are a good player. You know, just remember that variance is part of the game. And sometimes, yeah, and we know all those things, but it's helpful to hear it from other people sometimes, you know, and we take it better when, you know, we hear the exact same thing that we would have told ourselves from somebody else, and it helps us through. And that's That's a life lesson too. Like that happens in life, not just magic. So.
Yeah, my friends constantly do that for me because like I get pretty down or like I'm known to get salty sometimes and I lose and they really like get me through it. Like I lost one match at Grand Prix Pittsburgh recently and like I was so down after I lost because my opponent like just like I got the wrong card back so it's like with the Dem Protector so it's like somewhat of a misplay and I lost to like that Ormondal land and it was like. I was like kind of really down because I felt like I could have prevented it, but they helped me get through. They're like, win the rest of them, you'll do it. And I did. So
excellent, man. That's great. That's great. So as you've gone on and played tons of Magic against a wide variety of opponents, what has been the biggest mistake that you see players make? And then how can we avoid that mistake?
The biggest mistake that I always notice is when people don't draw the cards that they want and like, say they like drew an extra land or whatever, they show an expression on their face and kind of like maybe flail their arms and show that they're not drawing what they want. And like, then they'll like slam the land down and like, then it just gives me a sign that like, they just don't have anything. And like, I can just get aggressive and it just shows me what they have. When people get discouraged like that, I always try to keep a somewhat cool face. When I'm playing, if I'm like getting flooded or whatever, I'll like, just like leave my man up, bluff an Avacyn or something. Like you have to do stuff like that to win. But like when people are just showing their emotions when they're playing, that if they're like flooding or getting mana screwed, or obviously if they're getting mana screwed, it's obvious. But if they're flooding, it's not super obvious unless they show it. So really, a tip for everyone out there is just to try not to show what you're drawing when you're playing the game. If you're flooding, if you're not drawing your answer, try not to show that on your emotions and your face and hand gestures.
Love it. Yeah, that's definitely a big deal. You know, controlling those emotions, being a little more, practicing a little more stoicism, I think goes a long way. Because these signals, they give away a lot. Like you said, like now you know, hey, I can be aggressive or, you know, he doesn't have anything because he just got all frustrated and slammed in the land. So I know that he just drew that. And so I'm going to go in. So yeah, so I definitely agree with that and have seen that myself. Now, turning the lens inward on you, what is the deepest thing that you learned about yourself from playing Magic?
Deepest thing. All right. So I played a lot of sports in high school and stuff like that, but I was never really like a superstar varsity player or anything. But I always like tried really hard to get there. And I would like I failed. I wasn't like a starter on a basketball team for high school or anything like that. But I still played a lot. So in Magic, like obviously I tried really, really hard the past year and a half, join the competitive scene to make the pro tour and become a decent player, I guess. So basically I can succeed if I really put work in. Obviously I graduated college too, so I put work in for that and I got there. But if I work really, really hard, then I can definitely accomplish the goals that I want.
I love that. And that strength, that confidence, the word that you used earlier, will again seep into other aspects of your life. It carries over because, like you said, you've learned, you've seen that with, you know, effort and, you know, preparation, and whatnot, you can achieve your goals. You can get there. And that's great. Like, you'll be able to carry that into all other aspects of your life. And definitely we wish you the best of luck in, you know, your upcoming pro tour and beyond. Like you said, you want to try and grab that rookie of the year spot. And I think that you're setting yourself up with a good chance of doing that, surrounding yourself with a good group and making a good run for it next year. So that's awesome. Thank you for sharing that. That's amazing. So how many pro points do you have?
I mean, I have like 9 in my life currently, like total, but like it resets when Hawaii or this new season. So I was looking at like other for rookie of the year potentially. You need about 35 to win it. So, I mean, you get 3 automatically from the Pro Tour. So if I have a decent finish there, maybe I can hopefully chain them or maybe top in or GP and maybe I'll get lucky and be able to win that. Yeah, so it resets. So for the new season, I currently don't have any because there hasn't been, I mean, it didn't even start yet. It starts on the 12th, I think, or something like that. So I was thinking about flying out to GP Portland to try to potentially get points, but with like college payments and stuff, I don't think, and like I saw a new GP schedule and there's a lot of close ones, so I don't think I'm gonna end up doing that, but I was certainly thinking about it just because there is also a Star City Open 2 hours from me that weekend, so I might just go to that.
There you go, get it in where you can, you know, get that competitive Magic play and then hit up those GPs that are close and within your reach. And yeah, I mean, I'm really excited to see you make a run for it and see how you do. And is this going to be Ah, going to be so fun to watch. Are you linking up with anybody for the Pro Tour? Because we hear that first Pro Tours are kind of rough, a little overwhelming. Are you hooking up with any players or any teams to really kind of help you get into it?
So my I'm a friends with Noah Walker. I don't know if you're familiar.
Yes.
I'm the Legacy Specialist, and he's also a very good standard as well. He has a lot of SCG Open top eights and standard. But I'm friends with him, and he's qualified. He top four at GP Columbus, I believe. I was talking to him about testing with him. I know there's another kind of local guy, Jonathan Sukenik. He won a Magic Online PTQ. He's like Watch Wolf. He streams a lot. So potentially him. I know. I don't know if Gerard Fabiano is going to be going to the Pro Tour in Hawaii, but a lot of my friends group is friends with him, so I know him through there, so I might potentially be. I'm not 100% sure yet, because most people aren't qualified yet. Also, I have some friends in Sydney right now who can re-qualify, so I might be testing with them if they have a good appearance.
Nice.
So hopefully, yeah, I'll be on some sort of testing team. Noah is also testing with Rookie of the Year Oliver too. Mm-hmm. So hopefully, if I do test those guys, if he tests with us, because he's a great player, he's obviously platinum already. And so hopefully if I get lucky, I can test those guys.
Man, that'd be really good. Oliver too is actually on the show back on episode 78. So he's, like you said, just a superstar, like young and crushing it. And so being able to rub shoulders with him will definitely be a boost for sure. So Matt, what would you say is your best format?
My best format is definitely standard. Pretty much all my big successes have been in that format. It's mostly because I like the grindy kind of games that Standard has. Similar to Limited. Limited is my second best format, but Standard is definitely just like, I mean, the metagame changes a lot, so you can switch decks, or if you can become really, really good with the deck, which is usually what I usually do. I usually typically play the same deck every tournament, but the Eternal formats haven't appealed to me as much. I haven't had as good a win percentage. Like, I had one deep run at the GP in Pittsburgh, the modern one last year with Affinity, obviously, but the Eternal formats I'm not a big fan of, because it's really matchup dependent. Less Legacy is less like that because of Force of Will being a card, but modern is very much about matchups. Like, I played Jund in the beginning, and like I would get paired against Tron a lot, and stuff like that, and like I just automatically lose. So I didn't like a form. I don't like particularly like formats like that where you can just get paired against the wrong thing and lose to anybody playing a deck that's just a bad matchup. So Standard, you can pretty much beat anybody with any deck or any like tier deck, basically. So that's why I like that format, because it's I think it's Standard and Limited are two highest. I could be wrong, but the highest skill intensive formats, especially Limited, because you have control over everything with drafting and sealed and all that.
So as far as Standard goes, this is great because I love Standard as well, and we love talking about it. Deck construction. Deck construction is both the pride of our lives and the thorn in our side. So when it comes to deck construction, especially now, like this is a perfect example, because right now we have a new set, and so people are trying to figure things out, and everyone's looking at, you know, the GPs and the Pro Tour to figure out what's shaking out. How do you go about constructing a deck in Standard, an effective competitive deck? What's your process? Do you just grab a deck that's working and then tweak it? Do you go from scratch? Like, what does that process look like for you?
Obviously, I always, when the new set comes out, I look for what cards go into the top strategies. Recently, obviously Eldritch Moon came out, so there's a lot of cards. I built a new deck actually for the Columbus Open on release weekend a couple weeks ago, and that was I put a Blue White Spirits deck at that event, and because this set produced a lot of cards that were good in that archetype, like Selfless Spirit, Spell Queller, Nebelgast Herald, Mausoleum Wanderer, mostly those four cards. But so we played this deck that we tested against Bant Company, which we assumed that would be the best deck, and it was doing well. I ended up not day two-ing that event, but all my friends that played the same list, they all cashed. But I got I was 5-1, I got mana screwed and stuff. So yeah, basically we built a new deck out of that. But the open last weekend, I played Bant Company a lot, Bant Humans, that deck a lot last Standard. And Bant Company was obviously, it won the open in Columbus. And I'm like, I felt like if I played Bant, I would have definitely made a deep run in Columbus. So the next weekend, last weekend in Baltimore, I switched back to Bant Company and I ended up making top eight. So I just saw, I think that deck, that got a lot of new additions as well in Selfless Spirit and Spellqueller. I like the Spirits deck. And Thalia and Tamio also. So that deck had a lot of new cards as well. But for when new set and deck building and deck construction So mostly I just look at what new cards fit into existing archetypes. And also a big thing with deck construction for me is sideboarding. I always want to have a very good sideboard. Before all my events, I lay out my deck and I go through each matchup that I think I'm going to play against. And I swap out the cards that I want for each matchup and see how many I need in my board to make sure that all the numbers are there, to make sure I know how I'm sideboarding in the tournament. And yeah, a lot of people overlook sideboards. They're like, they'll just play with their main 60 and be like, yeah, I'll build a sideboard later. But I'll build the main deck 60, and then I work even longer on the 15 in the board, because I think they're very, very important.
Sideboarding is the other huge part of Magic that a lot of people struggle with and focus on. And so those two things are topics that we love to talk about, the deck building and, you know, the sideboarding. And it's especially fun to talk about it right now during a time where, you know, there is a new format with, or a new set rather, introducing new cards, and we get to tweak old decks and find new ones and whatnot. And Blue White Spirits is actually a deck that I've been playtesting, getting ready for GB Portland. I also want to try out Bant because it's obviously still topping everything right now, and I'll be really interested to see what happens. Well, when this episode goes live, the Pro Tour would have already happened, so I'm really excited to see what they are going to do over there, and if anything crazy comes out, or if it's going to be more of the same. You know, who knows?
I think I'm predicting Green-White Tokens will do very well at the Pro Tour, especially because it won the last Open. But yeah, I think Bant and Green-White will still be the best decks, most likely.
So, Matt, when you are preparing for a big event, let's say you have a Grand Prix coming up and you're a few weeks out, what does your schedule look like? How much Magic are you playing? And when you do play, do you just, you know, grind, you know, reps and just kind of intuitively digest everything? Or do you have like specific things that you're looking for to kind of get the most out of each play session? What does, you know, serious preparation look like for you when you're preparing for a big event?
For me, we usually, a lot of the people that live near me are all like pretty good. They're not like, we haven't had many Pro Tour appearances, so we all like usually go over someone's houses and we just jam games against all the best decks against each other. I really don't play a ton in real life because we don't have a local store, which really, really hurts. So like, I can't go down and like to some store and there'll be like, you know, the people there that draft or play standard with. So we really gotta like, everyone has to not have work and not be busy with other things, and then all get together at once and playtest. So sometimes that's hard. So also Magic Online helps me a lot with that. I've been playing Modo for about 8 months now, ever since I won the SCG Open in Philly, because I was able to have some extra money. And because like early on, I didn't see the value of having a lot of these things. Like, I didn't see the value of going to GPs or going to Opens or playing Magic Online. But so once I finally got like the money to be like, all right, I'll throw $300 and buy Abzan Aggro on Modo, it really, really helps out getting those reps in, because you know all your matchups then without having to get all these big playtest sessions together, especially because like people have work and they have other obligations. So Modo was a big help. I'm usually playing at night, so I play a lot of that. Our playtest sessions, we usually play about 10 games of each matchup. We do five main board, five sideboard. Usually we'll count the numbers to write down what the matchups were like, so we'll go from there pretty much. I don't do a ton of real life testing since I don't have a local store, but so Magic Online is my main, like recently it's been my main mode of practice. Like for going up to GP Pittsburgh, I played in about 13 leagues and went 4-1 or better in every single one of them. So I was like, I'm very confident going in this event. Like, I made a Facebook status that I was very confident I was going to like top 8, and I did. And everyone's like, I thought that was really funny because you just like called shot of that on Facebook.
Nice. That's really cool.
I was like, I'm very confident that I will top 8 this event. And like a day later I did, but just because of all that practice on Magic Online, I knew like with my ridiculous record that I had with the Bant Humans deck, I'm like, I think top 8 this event.
So I love that you just mentioned that, because I want to dive into that. So you did 13 leagues, you said, and with a record of 4-1 or better. So that was a really good confidence builder, a really good kind of barometer to kind of check yourself. So in a similar event, let's say that you started going into the leagues, I guess at what point would you have, I guess, switch decks is what I'm asking. Like if you went 5 leagues in a row and you were like 2-3 or something like that, like, because I think this could be really useful too. I know it's not set in stone. You can't say, well, if you do 10 leagues and you go 4-1, then you're going to top 8. I know it's not like that, but at some point you should have been able to say, hey, this isn't working for me. And obviously for you, you did 4-1 or better on all those and it did work out for you. But how can we use, I guess, leagues as a barometer? Like when would you have switched, I guess?
So I definitely switched if I started. I mean, I was between Green White Tokens and the Bant deck that I would have played. So this kind of happened, actually, what you just said, going into GP New Jersey, New York City, whatever that was in May. So yeah. I was at Toronto the week before. I played Green White Tokens, and I had I was 8-1 after day one, and then I just had another epic collapse somewhere to Providence. So I played Green White more in the leagues and the week going up, because I think New York was the week after that. And I was doing that. I was going 2-3. I was going 3-2 and mostly 2-3s and a 1-4 there. I'm like, for some reason, I just can't win with this deck. It's like the best deck in the format, but I just can't win with it. I'm like, I just don't understand. So like that tournament it didn't go well for me, because like the night before I was contemplating playing an Esper Dragons deck just because it won the GP before and like not many people played it. So I'm like, oh, maybe it might be good. But basically, I just kept playing Green White Tokens because I'm like, I got the reps in with this deck. Mainly just play with, if you play what you know, you'll have an advantage with it. But I ended up, like, people were gunning for Green White Tokens that weekend, and I ended up not doing well at all. And that was the only constructed GP I didn't make day two of in my life. And I played in like seven of them, but that was the only one I didn't make day two. And yeah, that was pretty brutal, because I kind of knew going in with those leagues that with the 2-3s, the 1-4, the not being able to 4-1 or better. Like going in Toronto, I was like 4-1-ing and 5-0-ing with green white, but like the hate came with the green black aristocrats deck and the four color rights deck with displacer. I just wasn't able to beat those decks consistently. I wasn't really ahead of the curve, like playing main board tragic arrogance and stuff like that. I still had like secure the waste Ormondal plan, like Lamb Hole Pacifist in the main, but yeah, so I was kind of behind there. But the leagues, I definitely think they're a very good barometer of how you're gonna do, because obviously it's shown there. Like I didn't do very well in the leagues, but I just didn't have enough time, and like I didn't really play test in real life that week, so I didn't have enough time to like switch decks to like the four color company deck or something. Like maybe I should have just played that, but like I didn't, or black white control. So I didn't have enough time to switch. Definitely if I had another week, I felt like I would have been more prepared. But I really like the leagues on Magic Online. If people have the resources to build your deck on there, it definitely it helps you sideboard too, because you get to see, when you're sideboarding, you get to see your whole deck laid out, and you get to like swap cards and be like, is this plan going to work? Is this plan going to work? Or whatever.
Right.
So that's one of the main things. I love sideboarding. It's just like it lets you really get it right.
How much does it cost to join a league?
The competitive leagues are 12 tickets or 120 play points. And if you 4-1 or 5, or you get your, so you get your money back if you 3-2.
That's right.
If you 4-1, you get like 6 packs, which is equal to like 20 ticks. And then if you 5-0, you get like 10 packs, and it's equal to like 32 ticks or something like that.
That's right. So you can chain them together if you
Well. Yeah, I've bought in the like one. Just kept going.
Love it. Well, that's really cool. Like, you've really intrigued me. I think that's a really good way to prepare, and then it keeps track of your record and whatnot, so you can say, hey, like, I've done five leagues in preparation for this Grand Prix, and I've gone 2-3. Maybe I should switch decks if you still have enough time to do that, like you were saying. Or hey, like, I've been doing really well, so I think I'm in a good spot. So I'm really intrigued by that, and definitely would encourage people who have the, like you said, the resources to build their deck on Magic Online to take advantage of those resources, because my understanding of leagues is you can sit down and play the games
whenever you want.
Yeah, okay, whenever you want. Exactly. Cool. That's awesome. That is really, really cool. So a new little tool that we can put in our tool bag and people can use.
Yeah, not everyone has the, obviously, resources. I didn't have them until I won the Open. So because of like money, I was like a college kid, so like I don't have money to buy two collections essentially. But definitely if you have like a big, like if you win a PPTQ or something, get like some money for that, like just buy your deck on Modo and then prepare for that RPTQ with those winnings.
Yeah, reinvested into Magic. So actually, on that note, speaking of being strapped for cash when you're trying to play Magic, what would you say to newer players? Let's say they're, you know, either new to the game or a similar situation as you in college, things like that. People who are strapped for cash, they love Magic, they want to get into it more, you know, especially competitively, what suggestions do you have for them who can't build the most popular deck, standard deck, or draft every day online? How can these players break into Magic and really sink their teeth into it?
So there's a few things you can do. The main thing I did when I started out with, because I didn't have a lot of money either, like I had to borrow a lot of cards. Like immediately, like, I'd, you know, try to, like, my friend that taught me to play introduced me to all, like, the better players in the store that had larger collections, say. So I would, like, I got a majority of that Jund Zombies deck and that Abzan pile that I play at that first event. And I borrowed the Sorens because they were, like, what, $30 at the time or something like that. Like, I didn't have $30 to pay for cardboard, like, a piece of cardboard. So borrowing cards is always a thing that I try doing, like, giving people maybe your extra cards for just, like, incentives that you'll give them back or whatever, just, you know, trusting you. But another thing you can do is just try to build the best, like, cheap deck, which is usually it's, like, mm-hmm. like, right now it's, like, White Weenie. Like, that deck is scary. Like, I lost to that deck last weekend, round one, in the open. It's, like, the most expensive card is, like, what, Kithian? It's, like, $8. There's a bunch of Always Watchings and stuff like that, which is, like, $1. But, the like, play decks like that, because they're actually normally really, really good. Like, that or, like, usually it's mono red at the time.
Right.
But it's a good learning deck, too, because you get to do combat math and stuff, which that's my forte, though, is, like, combat math decks, and that's why I usually play aggressive. But definitely decks like that are a good entry-level type thing, but they're also very, very, very competitive, and I've always had problems against those decks, playing the decks that I do, because I'm playing I usually play slightly slower versions of those decks, and they just can go under you. Yeah, so borrowing cards and getting those cheap, competitive, very aggressive decks is my advice to people.
Excellent. Yeah, I think those are really good, you know, suggestions, looking at the budget deck, and also just building, you know, good rapport with other players, like you said, and borrowing. So borrowing is a great, great way to go about it, and if for whatever reason your group lacks the card pool that you need or whatever, there's also a really cool resource out there called sparedeck.com, which actually lets you, like, rent. Yeah, you can really rent cards or rent decks, which is, I think, really interesting. So, again, if you're strapped for cash, if you have a little bit and no one to borrow from, then that's another resource out there. Matt, is there a non-magic activity that you do that you feel helps you get better at magic?
Sports. It's just like, I've always been very, very competitive. It, like, helps with my drive to be the best I can, be in magic. I mean, I'm not a competitive skier, but when I go out, like, skiing, and actually skiing is just, like, the straight up most thing that I think helps me, because when I go, I'll ski, like, I'm a ski instructor, but there's ski instructors that are, like, 45 to 70 years old that, like, they're the highest level, because there's, like, Professional Ski Instructors of America ranking thing. But they're, like, the highest level in that, and I'll go skiing with them, and I'll ask them, I'm like, what am I doing wrong? What can I do differently to make this turn better? What can I do differently to hit this mogul more better? Or stuff like that. Or I do the same thing with magic. I'm constantly asking players that I respect that what else could have done in this game to potentially win? Or what else can I have done to make my opponent have no chance in this game that I did win, or and stuff like that. Just always asking people for advice, what they would have done. I do the same thing with skiing to get my technique better, and I do the same thing with magic to get all my techniques and gameplay down. Recently at GP Pittsburgh that I top aided, one of my friends I went with told me that I showed emotion too much when I would, like, play, and I would, like, shuffle my cards and too much instead of, like, looking at my opponent. So he gave me an advice of, like, when it's my, because I play very, very fast. So it's when, and like he said, he's like, all this clock time is your opponent's, because you see the lines very quickly, you play very quickly. So after you're done with your turn, just put your cards down, look at your opponent, try to read them like that. And I did that after round, starting with round in day two, and I just did that the entirety of day two. And I was able to pick up on some things, read my opponent better. And obviously went undefeated on day two to make the top eight of that event. And so, like, just basically asking people that know a lot is what I do, like, within skiing. That's a big thing I do with that.
I love it. That was some really good advice right there. I like that. And what resources do you turn to when you're trying to hone your magic skills?
I read a lot of articles on Star City and Channel Fireball and occasionally TCG Player, especially Seth Manfield. He's a good writer and player. But, yeah, mainly those three websites. I also look on the Magic Online deck lists to find any of other ideas, any sideboard tech, any mainboard tech. I'll look at a lot of deck lists on Star City and at the IQ. Some people always have spicy things they play at those events. And, yeah, so mainly those. And then I'll ask friends for advice, deck building, stuff like that.
Love it. Absolutely love it. Again, all you prodigies out there, if you want to connect with Matt, you can find him on Twitter at MattTumovich13. He's not on there a lot, so the best place to hit him up is on Facebook. Just search for him, say thanks for coming on the show, ask him questions. And Matt, as we are here closing things up, what is one last parting piece of guidance you have for us? Either something you already said that you want to emphasize or something new that you want to leave with us here at the end.
Mainly a few things. Mainly just if you want to get better, which all of us do that want to play Magic, definitely ask for advice from the best players that you know in the story. That's what I've done. That's how I've grown. Always have asked people advice, and that's how I've gotten better, and that's how I've surpassed a lot of them. Do that. And also, like I mentioned earlier, when you're drawing poorly, don't show it. That's a big thing. I get so many free wins off people just showing what they have by making hand gestures, faces, complaining that they just draw lands every turn. Just don't do that. Just play like you have everything at all times.
Now, I want to acknowledge you for your contributions to the multiverse, and thank you so much for your time and for sharing your expertise with us. You are a hero among planeswalkers, and it has been a blast chatting with you. May you never be mana screwed, always draw what you need, and depart every plane victorious.
Thanks, you too.
Matt, thank you for being on the show. It was a pleasure having you on. And prodigies out there, as always, you can find the show notes at mtgprotutor.com/Matt Tumovich for a synopsis of what we talked about, as well as links to any resources. And of course, I want to do a few quick reminders. The first one being that the giveaway closes out this Friday. That's the Ultimate Tournament Bag giveaway, where you get a Pirate Lab carrying case, a playmat tube, a deck box, some tokens, some snacks, a lot of cool swag going on in there. So mtgprotutor.com/giveaway is where you can go for that, but only until this Friday, so make sure you sign up quickly. Again, this Friday, we have a Pro Tutor Prodigy meetup at GP Portland, so if you're going to be there, make sure you join the Facebook group to get all the details, all right? I can't wait to see you there. I look forward to shaking your hand, talking about Magic, and just seeing how you're doing. Thank you so much for joining me today. I love doing this for you. I'm really excited for the cool guests we have coming up. I'm really excited for the GP this weekend. If you're there, good luck. If not, then we'll definitely catch you next time. Until then, I'm Sean of The Gathering, and we'll see you in the next cast.
This round of MTG Pro Tutor is over. So you don't miss a single episode of MTG Mastery, be sure to subscribe to the show on your preferred podcast listening service for more exclusive interviews, deck building tips, and elite content. Or visit mtgprotutor.com to stream it straight from the source. We look forward to helping you think and play like a pro.